All right, guys, thanks so much for being on the call today. And I know we're doing this a second time because I forgot to press record. I just want to say congratulations real quick to Jim Lally. Jim, I'm not sure if you're on the phone, but Jim has his first deal closing Monday. Crazy, crazy rushed hard money deal, but we're getting it done. So just wanted to say congrats to Jim. Let's start here real quick. Okay, so today we're talking about how to properly process and shop a loan file. All right. Just making sure the recording's on since I didn't do that yesterday. And it is. Okay, so everyone kind of has the bullet points, but I just want to go over just a couple little things real quick. Before you can really shop the loan file, we just need to do some initial vetting out, of course, to make sure the loan makes sense. So everyone knows we're a commercial real estate loan. Obviously, we're going to get the loan submission. We're going to get the background story behind the loan. We're going to get the personal financial statement and tri-merge credit report up front. If there is any type of rehab or construction that is involved in this loan, we definitely need the borrower's real estate bio. I have a blank copy of that. If any of our rehabbers don't have one, that's fine. I have a blank copy for them. They can, you know, obviously put their information on it. If it's a bank loan, we're also going to get their professional resume on them first. So just a little vetting out here, of course, with the rehab bio. Do they have experience? Does it make sense? If they're a first-time rehabber for a 1-4 unit, that's okay. If they're trying to do a major renovation project of a commercial property, so 5-plus units or any other commercial property, they have to have experience. There's no lender that's going to touch them if they don't have experience. If it is a bank loan, especially an SBA loan, but, I mean, any type of bank loan, all banks want professional resumes on borrowers. They're very big on experience as well, improving the borrower can clearly do this. So we're going to do that for vetting out. I just kind of want to go over our golding rules real quick on LTVs. And again, I sent this to everyone via email because there are different associated LTVs with different properties. So on any permanent commercial transaction, so any type of permanent loan, I'm going to kind of go against here a little bit what I said, but 30% down is always the golden rule in commercial property. Yes. Multifamily does go up to 75% financing. Again, these are permanent loans, so the property must be fully rehabbed and fully stabilized. Multifamily financing does go up to 75% on TV. I just sent on an e-blast because we did a call with Sabal on Tuesday. They have a great multifamily program where they go up to an 80% LTV if the loan amount is over $1 million. But the golden rule on permanent commercial financing for a regular conventional commercial mortgage, whether it's going to be a bank loan or it's going to be a bank alternate loan with one of our stated lenders, is really 30% down. Again, even if it's a multifamily property and the lender will do a 75% LTV, the borrower still always has to be liquid. This down money does not include their closing costs. So those are some things borrowers never think about. They always have to pay for their appraisal up front, but their lender fee, broker fee, and title insurance are paid at closing, which they need to be liquid for, of course, in a purchase, because they're going to max out that LTV. So always 30% down. Just think of that for any type of, you know, permanent commercial financing loan. If it is an owner-occupied property, so 51% or more, so say you have a doctor that's going to go and buy a doctor's office that he can run his practice out of or she can run her practice out of. If they have good credit, you know, typically 680 or higher, we could get them into an SBA loan. Those are perfect SBA loans for professionals like that. And they would actually would have a leverage of 90% LTV, so they would only have to come with 10% down. Again, they have to still be liquid for their closing costs. 1-4 unit rehabs, always tell the borrower they should have 20% down on the purchase price. The lender will finance 80% of the purchase price. The lender will also finance all the renovations, but that is done in draws. So I've been explaining to a lot of your borrowers, they need to start the renovations. Once they've proven that they've done that, the lender will come out and do a site visit, and then the lender will reimburse them. So there's, you know, obviously they need to be liquid for their closing costs as well, but they have to be liquid for more things than they realize, and I've been doing that a lot with a lot of the borrowers you guys are sending me that we're all speaking to. So 1-4 units, you can get away with a higher leverage on a renovation project. Commercial renovations, doesn't work like that. It's a much more complicated renovation. The lender will typically finance around 70% of the total project cost. Total project cost would be purchase price plus construction. the borrower needs to come with 30% of the total project cost, of course, and be liquid for their closing costs. So ground-up construction of a 1-4 unit, we have lenders that will finance 20% of the total, lender will finance 80% of the total project cost. The borrower needs to come with 20% of the total project cost. So on the 1-4 unit rehabs and ground-up constructions, the borrower can get away with less down money. On commercial renovations or ground-up constructions, they're not going to get away with it. So that's really your LTVs. But just 30% on a permanent financing loan is always the golden rule for standard commercial property. Yes, multifamily typically is always at a 75% LTV, which means they come with 20% down. And if it is an SBA loan, if it is a bank loan for a great professional you've met, a lawyer, a doctor's office, I mean, it could really be any professional that's, you know, buying some type of office or a facility for themselves. We could certainly put them in that type of bank loan if their credit makes sense, experience, they meet all the other requirements. All right, so we went over standard LTVs. Let's just go over kind of where I break off FICOs. So 680 or higher, you're really bankable. So if you see the bars, Tri-Merge credit report, you know, if they want a bank loan, they really should be 680 or higher. We do work with Celtic Bank, one of our banks that will go down to a 645. We've had many other lender calls as well with permanent financing lenders that offer great loans where they will go down to a 650. But I understand they're saying they will, but I've worked with all these lenders, so it just really it should be 680 or higher. 600 to 679, you're really in that bank alternate category. You know, you're not... You don't need to go to hard money yet, but you're not quite bankable. Your banks really, really want good credit. If you're under 600, it's very hard to get someone a permanent financing loan. So we do work with Athos Capital that will go down to 500. Apex sometimes, we haven't spoken to them and we haven't done a new call with them, will go lower than 600, but they really don't like to, and there must be a very good explanation why. And Apex is definitely going to limit your LTV. So just really 600 is really the cutoff. If someone's FICO is under 600, it's very, very hard, almost nearly impossible to get them into a permanent financing loan unless they have some type of very crazy low LTV and very good story behind why their FICO is that low. Another, just a couple more things in terms of vetting out. Do some quick things. When a borrower sends you a property, Google the property. You know, just look it up. Obviously, you need the full address. So look around. Is it in a nice area? How's the property look? You know, in general, lenders do not like to lend on properties where they're not in nice areas. Now, if it's an up-and-coming area and it's a rehab, that's a different story. But if this is a permanent financing loan, you know, just try to see what the area looks like, you know, and get a feel, because that's going to give you a feeling in your stomach real quick that, oh, I'm seeing things I like or I'm seeing things I don't like here. So also you want to probably Google the borrower's name and maybe even their company name. I have had this happen to me a couple times where I've sent deals to lenders, and that's what the lender did. They Googled the borrower's name or their company name, and the borrower or the lender is in a lawsuit. I mean, the borrower or their company was in a lawsuit. It just literally popped right up on the internet. I didn't even think to do that, but just another good little thing about vetting out. If someone is in a lawsuit, there's really no way someone's going to finance them. It's just too risky of a situation because the lender doesn't want to get pulled into that. Those are just some initial things. I wanted to go over those bullet points and just initial stuff to vet out a deal and what you should look for. Let's go into processing now. So obviously everyone knows the documents we get up front on a commercial real estate loan. The loan submission is obviously the first thing I look at. I go through all that. I make sure everything makes sense. The biggest things I'm really looking for on a loan submission is, you know, I'm looking for the value of the property. I'm looking for, you know, if it's a refinance, how much debt they owe on the property, to make sure that the LTV works. Sometimes we get borrowers that are very over-leveraged. Back in the day, prior to 08, a lot of banks let people get into properties with literally no money down. I have a borrower right now, really nice gentleman. His name's Dave. He bought a mixed-use laundromat property prior to the market collapse, and Harvest Bank let him get into this property for $100 down. A bunch of events happened, and he's not even at the point he needs refinance. but he hasn't even paid down enough equity in that property, unfortunately, to even get him at that 70% LTV. So he's in a situation where he's going to refinance, and if he can pull it off, he's going to have to bring money to the closing because he has not gotten down to that 70% LTV really where he should be. So the first thing I do, again, go through the loan submission, just make sure everything makes sense. We do have a bottom part to our loan submission that says, if there's anything crazy about your deal, please tell me. Please just stress that to the borrower. We want to make sure their loan goes through, and if they give us all the problems up front, I can find a way to almost solve every problem, but I need to know up front because there's certain lenders to use for certain things, and I don't want to take the file, of course, to the wrong lender. So, I'm not even really sure what else to tell you guys about the loan submission. The loan submission is pretty much the loan submission. I guess the major thing on the loan submission is just make sure on a purchase that the borrower has down money. I see a lot of loan submissions coming through where the borrower wants to purchase something, and I'll see the purchase price, and then I'll see the loan amount, and it's the same thing. So the borrower has to understand that they need to have skin in the game, and again, we kind of went over LTVs a little earlier. Next thing I'm going to go through the borrower's tri-merge credit report. So, first thing I do is, obviously, opening up the file, the first couple pages of a tri-merge credit report list a borrower's, if they have any judgments or liens or anything against them, make sure next to them they say closed. If any of those issues are open, that's the first thing I'm going to address to the borrower about, because if they are open, it doesn't mean the loan can't go through, our loan that we're doing for them, but those issues are going to have to be settled at closing. I'll just have to talk to them and see if that is a possibility. Hopefully, again, they don't have to bring cash to the table, but if they do, they do. If it's a refinance cash out, I can use that cash out to pay some of these judgments. But obviously, we need physical, real payoff balances, and of course, the equity in their property needs to be there. So our loan needs to be solving their problem. Also, as I'm going through the tri-merge credit report, the one we use from Credit Check Total, I really like because it's color-coded, so it's very easy to go through. When someone's not paying, it'll just say, it'll be in red. It'll say negative, negative, negative. So you can clearly pick up when someone's not paying. Just scroll through it slowly, go through, see if they have any negatives. If they have any negatives, in the past 90 days, we have a problem with a lot of lenders. Our stated lenders out there, even our hard money lenders, and it just depends what it's on as well. If it's a mortgage late, it doesn't matter if it's a commercial mortgage or a residential mortgage. If they have a mortgage late in the past 90 days, we have a problem. So I need to address them about that right away. If they have had a short sale, foreclosure, BK, anything like that, a chapter, hopefully that stuff is at least 2 years behind them, and you'll be able to see on the tri-merge credit report when those issues stop. And sometimes it will say on that account, it will say closed. So you'll see it was negative, 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 but the account was closed, meaning that debt must have been settled. I mean, I still need to know what happened and why it wasn't paid. But the major debts that we are really concerned about, that our lenders are really concerned about, I should say, is mortgages, residential, commercial. Some lenders don't even like if borrowers are missing car payments. They consider a car a pretty important asset to obviously, us humans these days. So if someone's not paying their car, lenders don't like that. And really just like any major unsettled balances, they want to just know why. But the major thing everyone has to look out for is mortgages. So obviously I'll keep scrolling down. I'm going to look at the three tri-merge credit reports that they get and see where their scores are. So some lenders have rules where they will actually take a combination of all three FICO scores and divide by three, and that's how they come up with their mid-FICO score. Some lenders will just literally take the middle score, and sometimes it's not really fair because you'll see scores are sometimes all over the place, but it's at the lender's discretion how they do their mid-FICO score. Some lenders want all scores to be over 630 or all scores to be over 650, and that's just their requirement. So this is why we ask a borrower for their full tri-merge credit report. We need to go through it. The lender's going to go through it. Certain lenders we work with, such as Velocity, they require the borrower has 2 to 3 open credit lines. They must have over $10,000 in credit lines for each line. There's certain things they require, and I wouldn't be able to I know some of the borrowers you guys are working with are just sending me their scores through Credit Karma or those other free websites, but I'll keep explaining to them I can't use that because that's not what a commercial lender wants to see. So that's what you're going to do. Second document you're going to go through is the borrower's personal financial statement. Big things you want to look for on there. First thing, it's right on the first page. Look for how much cash they have on hand. Obviously, if this is a purchase, they're going to, I don't want to see if it's a purchase, they have $1,000 cash on hand. That's not going to help anybody, you know? Even if this is a refinance, they still need to have cash on hand because, again, if they're maxing out their LTV on that refinance, their closing costs, broker fee, title fee, lender fee, all need to be paid at closing. So they still need to come to the table with cash. Now, if they're if they have the equity in their property and say the LTV they're assigned by the lender, they're not their payoff balance, you know, is taken care of and there's extra money there, they can use that extra money then to pay off those three closing costs. So if there is room in the loan, their loan amount can be used to pay for a broker fee, the lender's own fee, and title insurance. Appraisal, always paid up front, so that's not an option. Other things you want to look for on a personal financial statement, look for other assets they have, specifically a 401k or an IRA. Those can sometimes count towards post-closing liquidity requirements, meaning a lot of lenders will say, hey, we want the borrower to have 2 to 3 months of mortgage payments on hand. All banks want borrowers to have at least 6 months of mortgage payments on hand or it's not happening. So some lenders will count someone's IRA or 401k as their, a certain percentage of it typically, as towards their post-closing liquidity requirements, which is good because if they didn't, then the borrower would have to have more cash on hand to qualify. So look at the assets they have. Hopefully their assets outweigh their liabilities. Look on the right side. Look at their liabilities. The assets are really more important to me, though, because I'm just seeing what other things I can leverage on them. Also, obviously, see how what other properties they own. With the lenders we work with, and again, most of the lenders we work with are not banks, but if you see they own a lot of properties, that's a good thing. Our lenders like to see that. That means they're an experienced real estate investor. They know how to manage properties. So you always want to see them hopefully owning more than one commercial property. If not, it's okay, but just the lenders like to see that. So that's their schedule of real estate owning the personal financial statement. Next thing I really do, if it's an investment property, you know, get the rent roll on the property. If it's a 4-unit, get right away, you know, right away I'm going to go through all the leases on the property. Make sure the leases are current. Most of the time borrowers will send me leases, and I pull up the rent roll to compare them to leases to make sure the start date on the lease, the end date on the lease matches up, to make sure the rent on the lease matches up. Just everything matches up. So when, of course, we're sending our files to the processor and underwriters at our lender's offices, we're making their job easier. In essence, we'll help our loan go through. So just always make sure they're current. I get a lot of leases from borrowers that are not current. They're like 3 years old, and they just sent me whatever they had in their file. So that's what I do. I just go through each lease and just make sure the start date, the end date on the rent roll, the rent, obviously the borrower's name, all matches up. On a rent roll, guys, most of our lenders want to see the square footage of each unit as well. So, again, I do all the processing, but I want to teach everyone this too as you guys become more advanced in this business. You start doing your own processing if you want to. Try to get the square footage of each unit and put that on the rent roll. Just ask the borrower. It's not typically in the lease if it's a residential lease, so just ask the borrower and put that. You could put that in the side notes. All right, after the rent roll, if it's a refinance, just a couple more bullet points I want to go over. If it's a refinance, especially a refi cash out, just make sure the cash out makes sense. Most of our borrowers want cash out because they want to go buy other properties because they're a real estate investor. They may have not identified those properties yet. That's okay. It just depends on the lender. But our lenders are okay with that. They're very used to that. A lot of our small business owners we're going to come in contact with, they're going to have some type of lien or something against their property. And if you have a bank loan, just so you know, and you get a lien against your property, you've really kind of broken your mortgage. There's a clause in your bank's mortgage that says there can never be a lien against this property besides us. So at that point, when borrowers do that, unfortunately, because they've gotten behind in taxes or water or whatever they got behind in, the bank will usually call that borrower's note. And at that point, when the bank says, we want all of our money in 30 days, you know, you shouldn't have done that. You signed these mortgage documents saying you weren't going to do that. Now you have a lien on the property. The bank doesn't care if you got sick or someone in your family passed away or something major happened to you. Unfortunately, they don't care. So a lot of our borrowers have to refinance cash out. And, of course, their cash out would be to pay that lien. I would get proof of that lien payoff. So just make sure the cash out makes sense. If someone can't give you a reason for the cash out, that's a red flag. You know, quickly, if someone wants cash out, they should be able to give you an answer for it. And it's not a big thing with our lenders. I just have to quickly explain to them what it's for. Not all of our lenders always ask me for proof of cash out, just so you know. It just depends on the deal. If the lender thinks this is a little shady or something, or if someone's asking for a lot of cash out, we're working on a deal right now. It's a warehouse that's worth $1 million. It's free and clear, and the borrower wants $650,000 cash out. That's a lot of cash out to just be walking with at the closing table. So you could bet the lender's going to say, I already know the lender's going to say this, so I'm already on the borrower for proof of what he wants the money for. The lender's going to say, that's a lot of cash out. I need some proof of this stuff. You know, you're not just going to walk with $650,000 and we don't know what's happening to it. So make sure those things make sense. On a refinance, you know, not always necessary, but this happened to me once. Just always get the borrower's payoff balance. Or if the borrower doesn't want to order the payoff balance right away because they want to see if the deal progresses, sometimes a bank will charge or a lender will charge a borrower just a nominal fee to order the payoff balance. If the borrower doesn't want to pay the 10, 15, 20 bucks, whatever it is, just ask them for a copy of their last mortgage statement. We just need to make sure that what they're saying they owe to the lender, you know, of course, and then, of course, what the property is currently worth makes sense. You got to make sure the LTV is going to work. Again, 70% is all that golden LTV rule. So I just got myself into a situation once where a borrower was telling me they owed $200,000 on a property, and I just believed them. And they really owed $300,000 on a property, and the deal didn't work then, and we wasted a lot of time on it. So just always ask them for their payoff balance up front. If they don't want to order the payoff balance again, that's fine. Give me a copy of your last mortgage statement because what you owe the lender will be right on there. If it's a purchase, always go through the purchase and sales contract. The most important thing on the purchase and sales contract, obviously on the first page, you're going to see the sales price. Also, you want to scroll through that and go down because you're going to see a closing date on there. So a lot of times borrowers will give me their purchase and sales contract. They're looking for a great bank loan, but they have to close in 30 days. And I always explain to them, if you can get an extension on this, we can make this work. But see, banks and lenders, when they get in touch with borrowers, they don't have time to explain all this stuff. They're very busy. So if the borrower does not come to an experienced brokerage shop like us, they're not going to have anyone advising them or holding their hand on how to get this done or letting them know. I've had borrowers that have gone to banks, and they're supposed to close in 30 days, and the bank, they're just, you know, customer service people in the front of the bank. They're not people that actually run and close loans, so their job is literally to sit there and smile and say, yes, yes, we'll get that done. But I've had borrowers say, oh, my bank's closing this. And I'm like, no, they're not. No bank is going to close a deal in 30 days. It's just not going to happen, especially on a commercial real estate deal. So really, if it is a bank deal, they need at least 60 days, preferably longer than that. If we're going to go like with one of our stated lenders, so bank alternate permanent loan, that's 30 to 45-day closing. If someone needs to really close in less than 30 days on a pure commercial property, that really needs to be a hard money loan just to make sure it gets done. If it's a 1-4 unit, we could probably get a permanent financing loan done in 30 days. And again, closing is really on the borrower. You know, how quickly are they going to get us what we need? So, and we're always waiting on the borrowers as everyone's finding out. So just look at the purchase and sales agreement and look at that closing date because that's a big thing as you're processing documents to make sure, again, that this loan makes sense and it's going to work out. One thing I kind of do is, I don't always do this too much. It just depends. Again, we don't get too many bank loans, but if it is a bank loan and I have the borrower's year-to-date income expense, I have their past 3 years of income expense reports, Sometimes they will go through their corporate tax returns too, just to see if the income they're claiming on their corporate tax returns matches up with their income expense reports. I've sent a lot of files to lenders where that didn't match up, and they've always asked me why and wanted me to get a letter of explanation from the borrower. And sometimes the answer why is, well, the borrower is making more money than they're claiming on their taxes. If it's a bank, they don't want to hear that. So, you know, we kind of know this may not be, unfortunately, a bank deal. But in general, when you definitely always want to go through the borrower's income and expense reports when you're processing a file. Again, what we're just getting really for our lenders is year to date and then previous 2 years. So they're very simple forms to go through. Just make sure that the income from the property is or the business is going up. It should be staying the same or going up. If the income is going down over the past 2 years and if it's going down drastically, underwriting is going to come back from the lender's office and say this is a problem. I've been in that situation several times. They're going to say we need a letter of explanation as to what's going on. And how is he going to turn it around? You know, even if the property is producing substantial income, lenders get scared when they see that negative trend. So make sure that makes sense as you're processing documents. Let's go into real quick on separating documents. So when a lot of times borrowers will send me, they'll either fax us or email us literally a package of like 80 documents, all attached, all in one attachment. We have to go through and separate them for the lender. You don't want to just send them all that. It becomes much harder to process the file because everything is in one file. So how do you then properly label those things? So when I separate documents, guys, I don't actually print all those 80 pages out and then literally separate them and fax, you know, scan them back into the computers here. I literally just use print preview to separate things. I just grab a notepad. There'll be 80 documents in front of me on a PDF on my computer, and I just go, you know, 1, 2, 5. That's 2006 year-to-date income and expense. I know pages 1 to 5 in these 80 stack of 80 pages in front of me is that's what it is. And then I'll just go print preview 1 to 5, open the PDF up in preview. I'll just save that PDF. Just 1 to 5 is the proper thing. And I put it in that person's file that's on my computer. So that's just a quick way to do it. Do it like that. Everyone, there's still people that print all that stuff out and will separate it themselves and scan it back in. We all should have modern computers these days that can easily do it a quicker way. So let's go into labeling documents real quick. Whenever, you know, just understand the reason why we go through and vet this stuff out is because we want it to make sense. We want to make sure we are sending our lenders reputable loan files. So, of course, they'll want to do business with us. They'll hire more staff to service our files. They'll give us more attention. So their processors and their underwriters are getting slammed with probably hundreds of documents every single day. And that's a processor's job, to be able to process all this stuff out and understand it. But we want to make their job easier. So as I'm going through and separating documents and I'm labeling them, what I do is I will label everything with the same. So I'll do the borrower's last name. So it will be, say our borrower is John Smith. Smith Trimerge. Smith PFS. Smith 1003. On the property, what you could do is I would do Smith, and then if the address is 123 Apple Street, Smith 123 Apple Street rent roll. Smith, 123 Apple Street, year-to-date INE. You know, then I would obviously 2015, 2014. I think I already said rent roll. But I try to keep everything uniform so that, again, as we're sending the processor at the lender, as we're sending them 5 emails with all these different attachments that are nicely separated and properly labeled, again, other brokerage companies and other brokers are out there sending. It's not like they're just getting all of my 5 emails for the whole package right in a row. They're probably getting maybe 5, 6 emails in between my emails because everyone else is emailing them. So it's incredibly hard to keep track of all that stuff as a processor unless people are labeling the stuff nicely for you. And lenders today, just so you know, expect that. I get files all the time from borrowers. You know, or even from, you know, just other brokers that will send us a Dropbox link or will just email me a ton of documents. And the attachments and the emails are like ABCD123 some crazy stuff. And, you know, so I have to open up the document, of course, and see what it is, which I would do anyways. But you can't send that to a lender. It's very sloppy. Don't do that. Properly separate the documents. Properly label them. That's a big for everyone in this business that really does it the right way. You know, you shouldn't just be sending them stuff that's not properly labeled. So let's get a little into shopping a loan. One thing I did not mention to you guys earlier when we were talking about kind of just initial vetting out, always remember as you are talking to your borrowers that lenders are going to always lend off the purchase price or the appraised value, whichever is the lesser. So just remember that. We get a lot of borrowers that they're in a purchase and sales contract for $200,000, but the property they say is worth $300,000. And they think the lender is going to lend off the $300,000. It's not going to happen. It doesn't matter if the property was worth $500,000 and you're paying $250,000 for it. The lender is only going to lend off of whichever number is lesser. So just keep that in your mind, please. Borrowers try to word this tricky because they really, in essence, are saying to us they have no down money, and then I have to kind of bring it out to them. But it's always the lenders lend off the purchase price or appraised value, whichever is the lesser. That's what your LTV is going to be based off of, the lesser. And usually the purchase price is typically the lesser because most of the times, especially on a rush deal, someone's getting a property for a little, you know, discount, more, you know, less than it's worth. And they know that, but it doesn't mean the lender is going to lend off the higher value. So just wanted to throw that out there real quick. Let's go into shopping real quick. I just want to say real quick, our loan submission is very extensive. Yes, I do that on purpose so I can bring out everything about the loan up front, especially if you do have a very complicated file. And I've worked a lot of very complicated loans. You literally do need to explain every single aspect of that file to the lender if you want them even to remotely try to figure out and wrap their heads around it. If it's confusing and you can't get the story together on the loan submission, executive summary, the lender is not going to get the story together for you. Lenders don't do that these days. So that's where we come in as commercial mortgage consultants to do that for borrowers. A lot of borrowers for some reason don't know how to do that, but again, that's why we're here. So if this is a rush job, though, sometimes I don't always have time to fill out a full loan submission, especially since everyone's originating, and me and TJ are here really mainly helping everybody with just, you know, some of the simple things too. But what I will do if I don't have time, such as the loan file that we're closing on Monday, just give the lender the basics. You know, if they're a rehab lender, give them in the email purchase and sales price, what's the as-is value of the property, how much rehab has to be done on it, what's the ARV of the property going to be. Give them, of course, you need to put the address right in the email. Give them at least the basics so they can see if it fits into their criteria. You can obviously do some initial vetting out. You know, obviously, if the lender lends in that area, they do rehab loans. This may be in their wheelhouse. That's pretty easy to figure out. If it's a permanent financing deal, you know, again, and it's a purchase price, what's the as-is value? How much down money does the borrower have? I always mention in there, you know, property is fully leased out or 9 out of 10 of the multifamily units are rented out. I don't really always get into numbers like the property's making this much every month. That's great to say the property's making this much every month, but then if you don't say what the expenses on it are every month, it really doesn't help anyone. You know, lenders kind of, at least our lenders, really want to know what's the occupancy. Is it 75% leased up? Is it 90% leased up? So just give them the basics in the email. When you are attaching documents to send them, because I will put that in the email, and then I will always attach, say on a rehab deal, I'll always attach the borrower's trimers, borrower's personal financial statement, a borrower's rehab bio, and anything else that's really relevant to the deal. If they're already in a purchase and sales contract, you can go ahead and attach that there. But just give them some initial documentation to vet out so they can see if they want to move forward with the deal. Again, we get a lot of deals where I know it's in the lender's wheelhouse, but before I'm going to go and collect every single stip on the bar I possibly could, I just want the lender to confirm with us, hey, yes, we are interested in moving forward on this. They may see something on the tri-merge that maybe I missed that they don't like. They may see something on their personal financial statement. They just may see something somewhere. We just had a deal the other day that I really thought would be a good deal for Velocity, and Velocity Googled the property, and they just don't like the way the property looks. It's too trashy for them. It doesn't show pride of ownership, they feel, and it's not for them. But it didn't happen like that at first. When I sent them the deal originally, they thought this was a good deal for them. Our contact there, Dave Ryan, sent it to their real estate department, and they just decided, you know, it's not for us today. You know, it's just not a good deal for us today. So that's fine. But always attach some initial documents so they can do the review. If the borrower does have any credit issues, you know, we always need to have, if there's any issue on the loan, there needs to be a letter of explanation. So if a borrower has any credit issues, again, as you're going through that tri-merge credit report, have them type up what happened, just a paragraph, explain what happened. You know, credit issues we see a lot. Someone went through a divorce. You know, someone had major health issues and they weren't able to pay. Job loss, market collapse of 08, a lot of people lost properties then. That's a really common one. You know, the whole world kind of died. That's not their fault. You know, it happened to a lot of people. So those are things where it'd be acceptable for them to have major FICO issues. You know, if they had a serious death or something in their family, that's also an issue I see a lot. I can send you guys an example from past borrowers of ours. It's just a little paragraph explains what's going on. It doesn't have to be too much in depth. Any type of issue, though, you see on the loan, if there's a character issue, like if the borrower has some type of background, you know, the borrower really should be telling us that up front. And I don't always ask the borrower that, just so everyone knows. Like, we don't run background checks here on borrowers. It would cost me $30 to do that with every borrower. So if I did that, I would probably bankrupt the company with all the deals we get in. So, you know, I don't always ask the borrower up front, have you had any major felonies or criminal charges or anything against you, financial crimes? But it is actually a question on our loan submission. I learned that the hard way one time on a deal I was working on. So, you know, just try to get that from them up front. And most borrowers should know that they have to disclose that. If a borrower has ever had a financial crime anywhere, that's not happening. They're not getting a loan. Depending on what type of criminal activity it was, they could still get a loan. And depending on the character issue, they could still get a loan, but it just needs to be addressed. And we need to address that they're over it and they're moving forward. So just keep that in mind. You know, credit letter of explanations, or there's a lot of other explanations. So the point is, if you're sending a lender a file where there is a credit problem or a character issue or whatever issue, get that letter of explanation and attach that right there too as their initial review, because that could be a deal killer right off the bat. They could say, hey, this borrower was carrying an illegal firearm a year ago, and, you know, we're not comfortable with that. We're not comfortable with that character issue. Really, commercial lending is up to the lender's discretion. It's really how the lender feels about it. The lender is never going to come back and say, well, the loan was really denied because of that. But the more character issues somebody has, in general, the riskier you are to lend to. So that's just why they're making those decisions. You always want to attach, again, like I said, if it's a rehab or construction deal, always attach the borrower's real estate bio. If it's a bank deal, always attach their professional resume. I guess the last thing I'm really just going to say real quick about shopping is, you know, that's how I properly initially present a file to a lender. You know, we know if it's really going to be in someone's wheelhouse or not. So, you know, as soon as the lender says they want to move forward, I'll start collecting the other steps from the borrower. But if I know it's a deal up front, I'll really just get everything from them. And then, of course, I would send the lender, the rest of the docs. Don't ever just shoot a lender like 10 docs at once. They don't want that. Just give them the initial stuff they want to review. Let them come back and say yes, and then go send them the rest of the steps. I try not to overshop our lenders. We have great relationships with our lenders. You know, if we ever get a stated loan, I typically send it to Velocity first because they always offer the best stated rates. But sometimes I know it may not be in their wheelhouse, especially if it's not in their population requirements. Sometimes we can get an exception on the population requirements, but most of the times we can't. So I don't try to overshop our lenders, but if we do have a rush loan, like Jim and I were just working on a rushed rehab deal for a borrower, I sent it to three local hard money lenders in the Connecticut area that lend there to see who could give us the best rate and terms. You know, and a lot of times I'll just let them know, hey, this is a rush job. I have sent this to other lenders. So, you know, sometimes that makes them get a little bit more competitive on their pricing. You know, lenders are used to being shopped by brokers. And, it, you know, again, we value our lenders very much. But as brokers, it's our job to get our borrowers the best rates and terms, or we're not going to get the deal done. And, again, the borrower could find better rates and terms themselves maybe sometimes, so we have to beat them to the punch. So whenever you send a lender a file, I try to give them 24 hours to respond to get back to me. If I know if it's a rushed file and I know it's in their wheelhouse, I know they can do it. Just like this deal Jim and I are doing in ABL, asset-based lending was the hard money lender on it. I knew Jeff could do it, so he actually responded to me right away. But I did call him just to say, hey, we're going to move on this. Let's start getting everything and start getting everything together. So the point is I try to give our lenders 24 hours to respond, especially if it's a permanent financing deal and we've sent it out to, you know, five or six lenders. Let them wrap their heads around it, go through the file, give us a clear yes, collect the other steps. But if it is a rush deal, you know, if I'm sending them a file at 5 o'clock at night, I'm not going to call the lender. It's the business day is past. But I would call them probably the next morning if they didn't respond to say, hey, Jeff, did you get the file? What did you think about it? Just following up. So that's really, guys, all I have to say about how to properly vet out, process, and shop a loan. And I just wanted to open it right now to see if anyone has any quick questions.
Hi, Megan. It's Victoria.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good.
Good. I have two questions. On the refi to cash out, if they have open issues on their credit report and they plan on closing those issues, so to speak, with that cash out, how is that handled? Does the loan company do it before they pay the rest of the cash out, or does the borrower sign a contract and it says they have so much time to do it and then show proof of payment to the lender? How is that handled?
Yeah, let me explain real quick. So that's fine. So someone does have open credit issues. They owe a balance or something like this, or they have a tax lien or whatever it is, you know. We're going to get the payoff balance. You know, if it wasn't me getting the payoff balance, it'd be the lender, but we move very quick. I'm going to beat the lender to the punch before their processing or underwriting even gets to it. So, yeah, I get the payoff balance, and we don't even give borrowers that option. That's all paid at closing, and that's what title insurance is for. That's the title companies, they collect every single payoff on every loan from the seller and the buyer on the transaction if there is two parties. Sometimes on a refinance, it's just one party, you know. But that all was paid at closing. So what will happen is the cash out on that loan, you know, say the first mortgage is going to get paid off. If there's a forced mortgage, that lender is going to get paid off. Right away, title takes over and handles all of that at closing. That's why I always file our broker fee with them as well, because they disperse money to all parties at the end of a loan transaction.
That's good.
That literally what we would do is just get the most recent payoff. The payoff has to be current. So meaning the payoff, you know, if we're closing a deal, you know, say, you know, October 31st, the last day of October, the payoff has to be good until then, and it will say right on the payoff balance. So we always get the most current payoff, and title will make sure that's paid. Everyone gets paid off before the borrower gets handed any money.
Yeah, we don't
give the borrower even the option to go pay that themselves. That's not going to happen. It has to be paid off. Yeah, because the lender – No. But title is just used to doing it like that. That's how they do it. And title company's job is to protect all members in the transaction, especially the lender. You know, so the lender always wants to be first position on that property. They don't want anything. They don't want any type of lien or anything on that property. Their loan can solve that problem, but that problem will be settled at title, or the lender wouldn't disperse their funds.
Okay, that makes sense. My other question was with the tri-merge credit report. With some credit reports, you ding your credit, actually, and it reduces it. With the tri-merge credit report, you're requiring this of all borrowers. Say they get their loan doesn't go through. They go to someone else. They have to run this report again, which is going to cost them. Does that ding their credit report every time they have to get this run? And if it does, what period of time do they have? Like, is it a month later it's going to ding it? Is it 3 months later? You know, because they're concerned about that. Anyone would be when you run a credit report. What is that going to do to your actual credit score?
Yeah, I hear where you're coming from, and I get this question all day long from borrowers. Great question, by the way. For them to pull their own tri-merge, just so you know, does not hurt them at all. It doesn't show – when you pull your own tri-merge credit report, that's not an inquiry. You're not a creditor. The borrower is not a creditor. They're not Visa or anyone checking on their credit, so it's not going to show up as an inquiry. And to be honest with you, it takes a lot of inquiries to really start really knocking some people's credit down, of what I've been told from creditors and the SBA and other lenders out there. But that's why I have borrowers do that, because if I don't have their tri-merge in front of me, and again, if they pull it, it's not going to hurt them. You know, if they're not a creditor. But if I don't have it in front of me and I can't present it to a lender, the lender is going to pull their credit. The lender is going to pull their credit because the lender wants to make sure right away, do their FICO scores even are a requirement. You know, our job is to prove to the lender they should move on this one and move on it very quickly.
So if they do bring a current tri-merge report to us, the lender absolutely will not go right behind them and do this?
Yeah, hold on 1 second, Victoria. We're just getting a little bit of background noise.
Okay.
No, the lender will not run someone's credit unless they sign a and if we give them a tri-merge credit report from the borrower, the lender will not run their credit. And that's why I do that, because I don't want multiple lenders running this person's credit, and all of our commercial lenders have different FICO requirements. So if I'm trying to get a deal approved by Velocity, and their FICO, they want 650 FICO, like on all three scores typically. If I can't prove that to Velocity, Dave's going to come back to me. He's going to come back to me and say, Megan, have him fill out this credit card authorization. No one's going to rush and do everything for this borrower if he can't prove to us he has these scores. So that's why I have borrowers do it, because it might be a file for Dave. It could be a file for Cherrywood. It could be a file for Key Capital, Apex. It could be a file for a lot of lenders. But I don't want all the lenders running his credit, because they're going to do a hard pull. And most lenders, any lender that's going to close a file is going to do a hard pull on the person's credit before closing, prior to closing. So
So even if you did present it in the beginning, say this loan only takes a couple of weeks to close, they're still going to do that at the end?
Yes, exactly. To make sure that borrower did it. Now, just that one lender, though, because the borrower is only going to go with one lender. Only that one lender will hard pull their credit, just to make sure the borrower didn't go do something crazy and go borrow money real quickly somewhere to come up with the down money or something. So they have borrowers do that, unfortunately, sometimes. They don't want to see the borrower went and bought a crazy house and over-leveraged themselves, and all of a sudden they're giving them a loan, you know?
Okay. This is good to know and to tell our borrowers, because I know I would be concerned, so I know that is a concern. So now I have more background on that, on what to talk to them about when we say we need this credit report. Because all of that is going through their head, and if we can address that up front, then we've gotten past that, and they're more likely to go ahead and pull it than to walk away.
Exactly, and I just want to let everyone know real quick, and I'm sorry. Our credit card total is just a dollar. It is a service, so I think people get a little scared about that. But our lenders actually refer people to that. That's why I do that as well. You know, the borrower does have to cancel that service within 7 days, so they're not billed the additional 30. But it's just a dollar, and it's a really nice tri-merge credit report. And the reason why we have them do that is because, of course, it only costs them a dollar. I have had borrowers go out and get real tri-merge credit reports and pay $30 for them, but I'm not trying to have the borrower spend $30 on a tri-merge credit report. But I always just explain to borrowers, if I don't present your tri-merge credit scores to the lender up front, you know, they're not going to know if you qualify for their program, and no one's going to move on your file, and everyone that comes to us has to move. So we need to get them the evidence. Yeah, and again, I don't want that lender pulling that borrower's credit, because I don't know what the laws are. I think lenders can, if we just as being professional mortgage brokers, if we send them a file, I think a lender can actually pull a borrower's credit without asking them, without getting a credit authorization from them, because I've had that happen before. But there are lenders that will not pull a borrower's credit until the borrower, it's just like a one-page form, they sign a credit authorization and allows the lender to pull it.
Okay. Another thing about this Tri-Merge credit report, I got a PDF file from you and Trina, but there's no link to it. If I go and I Googled it, there's a couple of different places that does a Tri-Merge credit report. So do we have a link that we can use to send to the borrower? That PDF file or that PDF document that you sent are instructions on what to do and how to do it, but there's no link to it. So how do we handle that?
There, I definitely have a link.
You do?
And let me, yeah, I have a link I can send you. I just want to see real quick. Okay. So the link is just www.creditchecktotal.com. That's what it is. And that's what the first page of this document doesn't explain like right in your face, go here.
Okay.
It just says click here, credit check total, but there's nothing to click.
Right.
That's fine, guys. They're just going to go to www.creditchecktotal.com and then just start following these instructions.
Okay, now is that address on that PDF that you just gave me? Is it on there?
It's not. I'll send it to everyone. It's written on the first page, but it's not as straightforward as it should be.
Okay. All right, so that will help. And I have one more question on this multiple properties in several states. You did say that a lender likes to see that a borrower may have you didn't say in several states. That's my question. You did say that a lender likes to see that a borrower may possibly have multiple properties. Do those properties have to be in the same state?
No, they don't have to be in the same state. What me and you were talking about yesterday, they just want to see that they don't have to own multiple properties, but if you see that they own other properties, especially pure commercial, 5+, the borrower clearly has experience, you know?
So that's what you base that on. It helps you to know they have experience. All right, that makes sense.
Yeah. I didn't go over this, though, and I should have, so thanks for bringing that up, though, Victoria. Yesterday you asked a question that you had a borrower that lived, I'm just going to throw an example out there. He lived in Connecticut, and he wanted to do a deal in Maine. Also, I should have put that in the initial vetting out. If a borrower does not live in the same state as the subject property, that always becomes an issue. Unless they do own other properties in that other state, and they have some type of way to manage those properties. Some borrowers will have a property management company, and they manage the property. That's okay. But if they don't live in that state or that same general vicinity where they're doing that deal, I have to come back and ask them right away. And I always – that's why on the loan submission it says what's the borrower's address and what's the property's address, because I can clearly see if they're close or not. If they're not close, guys, that's always going to be a problem. We have to find out from the borrower, how are you going to manage this property? And then if they have a property management company, it's going to work.
Okay.
If they don't, there may be some other good explanation.
Okay. Another thing about that deal that I was talking to you about, this individual wants it as a summer rental. Even if we did find a lender that would handle this for him and build this from the ground up with whatever he's got to put down, will they count that against him? I mean, next summer is like 9 months away, practically.
Yeah, so we had a couple issues with that deal yesterday. So the problem was, one question was, the land I know he owns free and clear, will they use some of the equity in the land for the construction? Because I told you, since this is like a single family residence, I could throw them into a guard money loan and probably get someone to do 80% of the total project cost they would fund, which the only cost is just the construction. It is really at the lender's discretion. I'm going to tell you, a lot of times lenders will come back to me and say no. He owns land free and clear. That's nice for him, but they're not interested really in the land value. They're interested in the property value. So that's really at the lender's discretion. I'm just going to have to say that. Be safe.
Okay.
He should tell your borrower they're still, even if it's free and clear land, they still have to come with their 20% of total project cost. If it's a commercial ground-up construction, 30% of total project cost. But honestly, that's just really lender-specific. The other problem we had on that deal was In terms of the permanent financing loan, all the lenders we work with really want to see properties that have leases on them. If the lease is month to month because the borrower's been the tenant's been living there for a year and now it's month to month, that's okay. It's really, really hard to get vacation properties and stuff done as a commercial loan because all commercial lenders not want to just vet out the borrower, but they want to know what is the stable income that's coming in on this property every single month. You know, they want the borrower to really be able to prove they can debt service it. But commercial too is really, really about the property itself needs to debt service. And it's just, it's a hard scenario because I know sometimes even properties, certain properties, especially vacation rentals and stuff, actually make more money being vacation rentals every year than being just a residential lease. I know they do because we've talked to borrowers and gone through those scenarios, but I have some people we could take it to, but it's going to be a million times harder to get that loan funded commercially if there's not a tenant in there that has a signed lease.
Okay, one more thing, too, about him. Because he said, tell me what to do, and I'll do it. What if the rental that he wants to build is more than one unit rather than just one unit? Would that make anything different or still the same issue?
It would only be different if say he's going to build a two-unit, three-unit, or whatever. It seems like they're all going to be vacation rentals, so I still have the same problem. You know, I understand they're bringing in, now you're bringing in double income, but if he goes to buy a two-unit, it's also going to up his construction costs.
Right.
You know, so
it's
kind of all going to weigh out. If he had a tenant in there, fully through the year, this would be so much easier to take him out into a permanent loan for, in terms of commercial.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So I'll throw all of that by him.
I
hope we can help him in some kind of way, at least with the equipment that he wants to buy, even if we couldn't help him with the property that he wants to build. So if he built it on his own, if he has the money to build this on his own, could he refinance that? Because after someone is in it, or it would still have to be the 12-month thing.
I could put him into probably a hard money construction loan to get it built for him. I don't know too many banks that when they get involved in ground-up construction of just 1 to 4 units, unless it was like a whole entire subdivision, you know, of, you know, 20 single-family residents, but it's a whole subdivision. So that's why I was suggesting hard money, which probably is not what he wants to hear, but what I would say to him, too, and we can jump on the phone with him if you want, you know, I would ask him if his bank's probably already said no, and that's why he's gotten to us. We kind of went over this yesterday. So if his bank has said no, we know that 9 times out of 10, every other bank's going to say no, too, you know.
Right.
So, and if it was his bank where he keeps his deposits and money and they said no, then there's no chance of another bank. So,
right.
You know, I could put him into a hard money loan. We could definitely get the construction done for him as long as he has 20% of the total project cost. And, of course, his closing costs, appraisal, broker fee, lender fee, title insurance. We could still totally do that. I'm not saying the takeout's going to be impossible. It makes it a lot harder. And really, what I would try to do is see if he has any past experience with doing this with rentals.
Okay.
I would try to see maybe if we could actually take him to a bank for a takeout. Sometimes local community banks, local niche banks are much more lenient on terms than our bigger, larger lenders we work with because they're just larger lenders and they get so many loan submissions, they have to have strict terms. So that's what I would try to do with him, but we have to see where his FICO's at for us to advise him. We have to see how much cash he has on hand. I have to know his experience level as well.
Okay. All right, I'll talk to him. Now I have a clearer picture. I'll talk to him as soon as I can get him on the phone. Because he's running that business, it's hard to get a hold of him sometimes, but I will.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Of course. Thanks, Victoria. Guys, does anyone else have any other quick questions about what we were talking about today?
Megan, this is Jim Buell in Indiana.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm very new to the operation here and just trying to get a feel for what all is going on, how you're doing things. A couple of questions here on what you covered today. One, in regards to appraisals, a lot of times on turnaround and timing to get anything done quickly, obviously an appraisal is absolutely a necessity.
Yeah.
So
who
orders the appraisals? Is it somebody local? If you're looking with larger lenders, do they do it, or how do you, who controls the appraisal process?
So ever since the collapse of 08, that's always the lenders. Borrowers and brokers now cannot order an appraisal. The lender will not allow that. And if they find out you did it, they won't close the deal. Or they wouldn't accept the appraisal anyway. So it would be a waste of the borrower's money to pay for an appraisal, you know, around $500 for a residential appraisal, $3,000 for a commercial, because the lender's just going to require it done again and their appraiser's paid. So our larger lenders typically will use an appraisal management company. That's how they work. Yes, you're 100% right. That appraisal is what takes the longest on a commercial loan. Any transaction, even our 1-4 unit investment properties, even though we're doing them commercial as commercial loans, a residential appraiser is still the one that goes out there, just so everyone knows, because it is still a residential property. So, the lender always has to order that. It just depends on the deal and the lender. So if it's a small, say this deal I'm doing right now with ABL, they're a more niche local hard money lender. They're not a nationwide guy. They have their own appraisers that they literally, one person in their office just orders appraisals. You know, that's what they do. They have appraisers in certain areas. If it's a larger company, a larger lender, like a Velocity, a Vizio, one of our nationwide stated lenders, they actually use an appraisal management company, and the appraisal management company will typically locate a local appraiser and call them and see how quickly they can get out of there. It just depends on the lender. What Apex does, they're also a very large lender. They're one of our stated lenders, but Apex actually, they don't use an appraisal management company, and I really hate when lenders do that. It slows down the process because now I have to deal with, you know, the lender is speaking to the management company is speaking to the appraiser. So when you keep adding people in the lane, you know, the message keeps getting messed up as it's whispered down. Apex literally, what they will do, and Athos Capital does the same thing, they'll call 3 local appraisers to the company. They just have a database themselves of appraisers. And whoever offers the cheapest rate on the appraisal, they go with them. And that they just send the appraiser out right away. And the borrower just physically pays the appraiser, face-to-face before when they come. The lender doesn't even collect the appraisal fee. The borrower literally just pays the appraiser when they come out.
Okay, great.
So it just depends on the lender, you know?
Yeah, I just wasn't sure whether maybe we made recommendations for them, or, and you've answered it, if they have a process they go through and have regional lenders or do whatever, then that's fine, because generally it's going to end up the same ones anyway.
Yeah, I mean, there would be no reason for us even to recommend an appraiser, and I've come across good appraisers in my years in doing this, but lenders don't want to see brokers really having any communication with appraisers, so even if I did give it to them, they'd be like, well, probably not using them for your deal, you know, which is fine. We would never call an appraiser and say, hey, appraise the property for more than it's worth. We would never do something like that, but a lot of that went on prior to 08, and that's why lenders are pretty they hide who their appraisers are, but they need to control the appraiser, and they'll say, you guys can control everything else. We'll control the appraisal.
Okay. The other question I had here, in kind of going through this, it suggests that you, and you've mentioned that you do these submissions and turn it into the lenders and choose who you're going to go with. But then you also kind of say that we do this, that, or the other. Do we ever speak to the lenders? Do we present this to other lenders? Or is that all go through you, funnel through you, and direct it to who you want to propose, give the proposal to?
Yeah, you guys don't have to do that. I do all the back-end coordinating and shopping of the loans, but you can get as involved in the deal as you want. So if there's a lender you know of that you want me to send the file to, I certainly can. You know, chances are we probably work with them, but if we don't, there's a million lenders out there. You know, we work with around 100. We don't work with every lender out there, but I have no problem working with a lender you want us to work with. That's obviously part of your service. I don't know if you know, though, every Tuesday we do a lender call here, though, as well. So one of the lenders jumps on the phone and just gives some background information. Did you know that?
Bella.
Hello?
Hey, James?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, did you hear that we do a lender call every Tuesday?
I understand. I'm just trying to get up to speed with what's done, when, and where, but this is the first call I've been able to get on, so just trying to get up to speed on how you do things. So.
That's part of your monthly fee every single month. I'll handle all the processing and shopping of the loan for you. You're obviously going to enter your contact in the CRM, and you'll see once, you know, after we've talked to them and stuff, on the left side of the CRM in the background notes, I'll start labeling, like, every lender I sent the file to, and then when I get their responses, I'll start putting their responses in there. So at any time, you can log in and just put your contact name in there, their first and last name in the CRM, pop up and check on what's going on with them. I keep you guys copied on all emails between your clients with you anyways, and I usually track all the emails in the CRM as well, so you can literally follow along with them.
Okay. What's the procedure if we've got a loan to discuss and kind of just get your feeling for where it works or doesn't work and whatever? Is that on a separate call, or you have a day, or send you an email, or how's that best approach for you?
We can do them on these training calls. It doesn't matter. We used to do calls a couple years ago where we just had like a deal call where, you know, people would just kind of throw out deals they were working on. But you just shoot me an email. Say, hey, I have a borrower in this situation. Does this make sense? Or if you want, if you're brand new to the business, I'm more than happy to jump on a phone call with you and the borrower as well. Just try to make sure the initial things about the deal make sense. You know, if it's a purchase, they have to have down money, you know. They also be liquid for their closing costs. So just those initial things, and I know you're probably still going through some of your training, so one of them is qualifying a borrower that you're going to take. Just some initial things that make sense, you know. Borrowers are always going to ask you, what's my interest rate, what's my rate? I can't tell you what your rate is until you tell me what you're trying to do. You know, I can't tell you what your rate is until I know how much cash you have on hand. I can't tell you what your rate is until I know your tri-merge, what your tri-merge credit scores are, and I need to know if you have any past FICO issues, any liens, taxes. So there's things I need to ask them before I can tell them their rate, because we do all types of loans. We do bank loans. We do bank alternate. We do rehab bridge construction. So, you know, sometimes you might have a borrower that has amazing FICO, 800+. They are totally liquid. That's great. But they want to buy a property that's totally abandoned, and they want to lease it up. They're not going to get a bank loan on that. Yes, they themselves are very bankable, but the property's not producing any income. So you can't get into a permanent financing loan until that property is producing income. And generally, the property is going to have to be almost fully leased up in order for that to happen. So, there's got to be proof that it's going to be producing income by closing. You know?
Yeah. Okay. I've got a couple that I need to talk to you about, so I'll send you an email. Thank you.
Shoot me an email and run them by me, and if you want, we can jump on some phone calls with some of them as well. So, guys, did anyone else have any other quick questions about today's training, processing, shopping, a loan, anything like that? All right. Guys, thank you so much to everyone for being on the training and gals. We typically do these trainings every Wednesday, just so everyone on the phone knows if you are new, from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, but forgot to record yesterday's training, so we did it again today. So every Tuesday we do our lender calls, 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. One of our lenders will jump on the phone that we work with. And James and anyone else that is new on the call too, I do record all these calls and send them out. And last night, I believe I sent out every single training we have done since August 16th, and there's quite an amount of them there. So, catch up on them when you guys have time. You can clearly kind of see which ones are you know, the more important ones. But, guys, I'm going to send this out to everyone, and if anyone has any questions, just shoot me an email, okay?
Great.
Thank you. Thank you, Megan.
Thanks, guys, for being on the call.
Bye.
Bye.